So we come to this third week in this series, looking at this question of being disciples and following along the way of the Lord. In the gospel today, we heard about Jesus sending 70 or 72 of these people that became disciples, followers of him who was sent to go out in pairs to proclaim the gospel to all of the people around, all the different villages and towns where Jesus himself would go and minister. It's probably the 70 because in Genesis 10, we see this list of the 70 nations that were there in the world. And then in Numbers 11, we have another place where Moses invites 70 to be the elders of the people and leaders of the nations. And so we have this sense of discipleship, and we've been kind of toying around with it for a while now. Of course, back at the beginning of Advent, we launched this new sign and symbol as the logo of our church. And we walked through over the 4 weeks of Advent this exploration of the four Gospels and their connection and their relationship to our lives, this sense that we are often invited and stirred into a response when something changes in our lives, when we're called to go out on the quest. And the Gospel of Matthew joins us in that journey. But sometimes there's suffering. Sometimes we have to experience dealing with all kinds of stuff that arises in our lives. And Mark is there to be part of that experience. But of course, we're there in the height of joy and wonder as well during Easter and those times of the resurrection. And the Gospel of John helps us along that process. And finally, Luke invites us also into this experience of service and response to all that God has already begun to do in our lives. We see that there is this continual cycle of movement in and around this season and cycle within our lives. Of course, forming the heart of the logo are these 72 circles inspired by this gospel that we hear today, representing not just the head, the hierarchy, the bishops, the leaders, but the whole church. The whole church is part of this movement and being called to share in this journey. So what is it to be a disciple? I mean, a disciple is simply someone who's learning. It comes from the Greek word mateo, which means to be invited into this experience of discovering more. And so Jesus is always there teaching us, instructing us, calling us, showing us, giving us the example of his own life, pointing at that, but inviting us to share in that. As a good rabbi, he invites us deeper into that question. And so to be a disciple is this lifelong process of learning and discovering. It's not about getting it all right at the beginning, but that constant process of discovering more, of being called to be more, and so learning more about the ways of faith. But of course, being in the church is not necessarily enough. There's that old image that's used. You know, being in church doesn't necessarily make you a Christian, just as being in a garage doesn't necessarily make you a car. And so it's important to recognize that it's more than just being here at church that this is about. We know, of course, that there's this whole sense of a spectrum of belief. There's people that will say, look, there's just no possibility whatsoever of faith. There's no possibility of God. And so, you know, atheists who say, look, there is no God. And then people who are questioning and struggling and trying to come to terms with this possibility. And so, you know, the agnostic position that's kind of filled with doubt and questions, but at least there's an honesty about that. And then others who will say, look, you know, I believe there's some sort of power, there's some sort of God, there's some sort of divine something or other. And so this sense of the deist who moves deeper into some sense of, or at least something greater than ourselves. Why is there something rather than nothing? And then those who say, well, you know, I believe that there is a God and that there's a possibility of actually being in relationship, of having a friendship with God, but I haven't actually moved to that process and moved to that stage. And then, of course, there is those who are committed believers and Christians who not just know the reality of the possibility of God, know that God can be in relationship with us, but that have moved into that journey within their own lives. Of course, one of the great realities we have in our world is that so many people have had that sort of sense of a spiritual experience and who acknowledge that watching a sunrise or being there holding their child, there's all kinds of moments in our ordinary human existence that are wonderful, joyful, spirit-filled moments, but would not for the life of them ever regard themselves as religious. You know, I remember preparing a couple for marriage, and one of the questions they ask is, well, you know, how often do you go to church? And they said, oh, we go regularly, Father. We go every Christmas. And I'm like, that's good. It's a good start. But, you know, we're not fanatics. You know, we don't go more than once a year. Goodness gracious, that's, you know, that's more than enough, surely. But this sense that religious experience or spiritual experience is at the heart of what it is to be human. And so recognizing that as this beginning. But we see also that there are these kind of thresholds, these processes, these different stages in this experience and this call. You know, from the sense of initial trust to a curiosity and an openness and a seeking, moving into discipleship. So I'll just walk through each of those stages in turn, just looking at the different parts. Now, one of the things with initial trust is that I think that's been one of the great problems of the 20th century moving into the 21st, is that a lot of that sense of trust has been lost, both in terms of the trust of God. The Second World War really shattered that for a lot of people. When we saw the brutality of humanity, when we saw that people could, in the Holocaust, do such abominations in the midst of the Soviet Gulag, in the midst of places like Hiroshima, that sense of just this absolute terror that was unleashed upon the world. And validly, people asked that question, well, where is God in the midst of this? And then, of course, within our own experience, the sexual abuse crisis has destroyed that sense of trust for people so profoundly, so incredibly. And unless there is that sense of trust there in the first place, then why would anyone move to anything more? And so building trust is one of the first things that we as the church, we as the community need to do, to be people ourselves in our own individual lives that are trustworthy. There's no small wonder that one of the titles that we give to the Pope, to our Holy Father, is to be the Pontifex, to be the bridge builder, to be one who stands in that place of calling and inviting people deeper into that relationship with God. Moving on from that, if there is that trust, if there is that basis in our lives, then we can see and we can begin to have that sense of curiosity, seeing, well, there's something about that person. There's something there that is kind of inspiring, that is hopeful. You know, why are they always so happy when everything around them is falling apart? Why is there this profound sense of peace that I see in that person? And so that might awaken this sense of curiosity within them. Moving on, if they have that sense of curiosity, then perhaps there's a sense of an openness. They begin to acknowledge that there's something more, something beyond themselves, and they begin to have that sense of wanting more. It's still a situation of passivity, so they haven't yet actively done anything about it. But at least there's that sense of openness. Yes, there's a desire, a hunger, a longing for more. It's only in this fourth stage that we begin to see this seeking, where they begin to move actively into following and questioning and begin to really study the scriptures or begin to explore the possibility of prayer and begin to see what that might look like within their own life. That sense of dating with a purpose. It's that sense of beginning to move and testing the waters of relationship with God. And then finally, in this fifth stage, which again has a whole kind of gradations and cycle, and there's all sorts of variations of how we live that out, but there's this active choice now to live for God, to orient your life around God, and to say, look, I need to get rid of those things in my life that don't lead me closer to God and call me into that experience of following in the ways of the Lord. Just to bring this out a bit, I thought it'd be helpful just to share how I've kind of experienced these different stages in my own life. Initial trust, I guess, was always pretty much there. you know, as someone with my family, we always went to Mass each week and we prayed at home, praying the rosary each night. And at that time, you know, there was just this sense of trust. It was still a trustworthy kind of experience, encounter. God, religion, faith, they're all things that I saw as basically good, but absolutely irrelevant to my life. You know, yes, I went to Mass, but it didn't actually impact upon my life in any really significant way. What began to change with me and that sense of curiosity began to develop only when I was in year 12. And it was that particular day when my older brother, so I'm the youngest of five, two sisters, then my two brothers. My two brothers were pretty close, and they would do all sorts of stuff together, and little me was always excluded. And so it was this sense, I was always, particularly my brother Stephen, I was always just looking up to him and just wanting to emulate him. But as he admitted on this particular day, he hadn't treated me very well. In fact, one of the things that happened was that he apologized to me for being a dick. And it was that sense of, what on earth is happening? You know, this brother who truly was, you know, a bit of a... You can supply the other words that are necessary in that sentence. And then he changed. And he just wanted, apologizing to me, saying sorry for all the ways that he'd treated me so badly. And I thought, wow, you know, what has happened in his life that now he's wanting to be a little vulnerable to me and to express, you know, love and affection and all these things that I hungered for, all these things that I wanted. And so that sense of curiosity was there. But even though other people then invited me to be part of that same weekend experience, I kept saying no. You know, I didn't actually want that much as part of my life. But over the next 18 months, it took until I eventually made my way to that same Antioch weekend. You know, it was then that there was at least a sense of openness. Seeing what had happened in my brother, and then with mum and dad, they, in the meantime, had gone to a marriage encounter weekend. And, you know, before that, they were fairly cold and just, you know, hello and that sort of thing. But suddenly they came back and just wanting to hug the life out of me. And I was just like, what is going on here? All these weird things are happening to my family. But that created this openness. That created this sense of there's something more. And so going to this weekend and being surrounded by all these other crazy people that wanted to hug me, opened this reality. And it was because of those preliminary events, because of those experiences, that on that weekend I had an openness. On that weekend I went with an open heart. I went anticipating that God was real, and then I met Jesus and I knew that he was real and that I could be in a friendship with him. And that was this movement then to actually then to begin to seek things in my life. I began to pray personally. I began to read the New Testament. I began to meet with other Christians. And so I made a commitment to be part of that youth group. And I made a commitment to go to Mass, not just on Sundays with my family, but also with the others there, and, you know, the Wednesday night Mass, which featured, of course, the Devon and tomato sauce sandwiches on this terrible white bread. But anyway, it was all good because of the context and the mix of that. And so that seeking then continued for probably the next 3 years until I went through university. And in my final year, it was only then that I think that I really began to say, look, this is so powerful, this is so significant that I need to make another decision and I need to reorient the whole of my life around God. And I realized that my heart was no longer just in making money and being successful in business, but I wanted to serve God and I wanted to give everything back to God. And it's only then, over this, you know, 5-year period, that I was able to then move into that experience of discipleship. The Lord is always calling. The Lord is always inviting us into that sense. Just as we heard in the gospel today, that when they came back, you know, they were able to announce that the kingdom of God has come near to us. And indeed, we didn't read it today, but that whole sense of the disciples rejoicing that all of these things happened because we were faithful to you, God. We were faithful to you, this message, and this sense of transformation that is possible. None of this happens straight away. None of this happens in an instant, but it's this invitation to learn more about Jesus, an invitation to discover him and to remember that call that we heard last week so strongly. You know, do not be afraid in this. We're called into life. We're called into joy and wonder. And so God will always make himself available to us. The process is just about being open to the next stage in our journey, to continue to open ourselves to all that God has prepared for us within his church.